This episode was made possible by our incredible patrons. Their faithful support allows us to continue the work of amplifying the voices of spiritual abuse survivors. We are a small team composed of two families. We committed early on to not monetizing any of the stories, so we rely solely on the donations of our Patreon community to operate. If you value the work and are able to contribute, you can join for as little as $5 a month. Another way to support Bodies Behind the Bus is by following, rating, and reviewing the podcast. It only takes a moment, but has a tremendous impact on our reach. Thank you for daring to listen.
Today, we are releasing the audio from an Instagram Live conversation that we had with Lori Adams Brown earlier this week. As the Southern Baptist Convention gathered for their annual meeting, there was one name at the forefront fighting for women to have the ability to be in pastoral roles within churches affiliated with the convention. Rick Warren, former lead pastor and founder of Saddleback Church, was surprisingly the face of this movement. You may remember that a few months ago, we had Lori and her husband Jason on to tell their story of abuse at the hands of the current Saddleback pastor, Andy Wood. Rick is aware of the allegations and is complicit in not calling for a credible investigation. What do we do with this? What does it mean when someone like Rick is the face of the fight for women to be allowed to pastor, but the women in ministry in his circles have been effectively run over by the buses of powerful men? Today, we dig deeper into these questions and more. I'm Jonna Harris, and this is At the Bus Stop by the Bodies Behind the Bus podcast.
Just a little bit of background about me for those of you who don't know. I was Southern Baptist pretty much my whole life, over 45 years. And not just that, like an MK, missionary kid of Southern Baptist missionary parents raised in Venezuela. I was recruited out of Venezuela to go to a Southern Baptist university on a full leadership scholarship. So I studied at a Southern Baptist university, did summer missions throughout my career or college years with Southern Baptist missionaries, married a Southern Baptist missionary, MK. We got married at the Women's Missionary Union because I just loved the building. I mean, we have a chapel there and I loved Lottie Moon and I just wanted to get married there. So then we went to Southern Baptist Seminary. Both my husband and I served 20 years as Southern Baptist missionaries. And then I came on staff as a pastor under the leadership of Andy Wood, who recruited me and my husband both to come work here in Silicon Valley at a megachurch, which is, as far as I know, still affiliated with the Southern Baptist Convention. There's a lot of secrecy. I don't really know, but at the time it certainly was. I was one of the NAM spouse assessors for the church planters. But my story really centers around the fact that I was a woman pastor. Obviously, I'm a woman. And I worked under the leadership of Andy Wood, who I thought was an egalitarian. And now I realize there's this sort of concept of faux egalitarian, or there's a large difference between what is soft and hard complementarian. So this is not a conversation that's super relevant outside of this little Christian evangelical Southern Baptist bubble that we're talking about. But for those who are sort of insiders in this conversation, you may understand what I'm saying. And my whole point right now is that this needs to center around women. We've seen before in the SBC where they have used a controversy, and particularly the controversy around women preachers or women pastors, to distract from abuse. And so for me, abuse is like front and center right now, not only because I'm an abuse survivor, and the abuses I survived were at the hands of Andy Wood. Nothing physical or sexual, but definitely intense abuse to the point where me and many other survivors who experienced this abuse from him, which would in my case be psychological, emotional, verbal, financial, multiple types of abuse of that nature, behind closed doors where there was sort of this he said, she said created. And so that's sort of the pattern. There's a lot of details of that I go into great detail on the A World of Difference podcast. We're in six episodes, starting with episode 100, my husband and I share kind of in long form, because there's not a moment where I was sort of hit over the head with a baseball bat. I wasn't sexually assaulted. So that it's, you have to understand the long form a lot. Like when you listen to the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast, you need to hear the long story to understand really the nature of this type of abuse. And even though my body wasn't physically or sexually injured, my body has kept the score. So the work that a lot of us have had to do in this survivor community of abuse by Andy Wood and Felipe Santos, covered up by Rick Warren last summer, and that's all documented in news articles. we were Rickrolled, right? But not in the way that like Rick Astley would start singing like, it's more like we're talking about, it's if you're a Ted fan, it's more like the crying at a funeral. Like it's a sad, right? It's not, I'm never going to give you up. It's, I am going to give you up. I'm going to let you down. I'm going to desert you. I'm going to hurt you. Like that's our Rickroll, right? And it's just, no, it's not okay for pastors, for people who claim to be following Jesus, to abuse and cover it up systemically. And for those two to somehow in some strange upside down world be the two men who are the poster men for women pastors in the SBC, this is completely unacceptable. I mean, I would argue very few people care as deeply as I do about women being pastors, both on a theological level where I've had to be able to explain this theology and where it's like authentain and epitrapo to people like David Platt in my career. I've had to know it was never secondary for me. It was always a primary issue to know why I had gifts in pastoral and leadership and teaching and these, why I had those gifts. And the honest truth is because the Holy Spirit does not gift based on gender. And you prove me wrong, please. Please prove me wrong. It's not, it's there. I mean, I have read the Bible in multiple languages. I speak six languages. And even just doing exegesis in like Greek and Hebrew, which I don't count as my languages because I don't speak them. When you do dig into the research, this is just women can be pastors, right? And so, but we don't need these two men platformed. We don't need their voices to be primary. Where are the women? At Saddleback, if Andy really has brought in a woman as a campus pastor, if Rick really did ordain these three women right before he left last year and on Mother's Day, and then fought at Anaheim and the SBC for women pastors very emotionally, very angrily. If it's all for women, like, where are the women? Why can't we hear from the women? Like, we need to center around women, and we need male allies, and there are some great ones. My husband's one, you're one. We have many, and we are so grateful. We absolutely need them. We just don't need these two guys. They're not allies. They abused me. They abused my friends. They abused my husband. They've given so many NDAs, and our petition has over 1,600 signatures now, and they still won't release the NDAs. And if I were Rick Warren and I were Andy Wood and I had nothing to cover up, why would I still have those NDAs? Why would I not be releasing them yesterday? These are the questions we should be asking, right?
It's a lot. I was going to say for context too, because I watched the first one of Rick's videos that he posted. What's the SBC stands or something like that. And for context, right, he essentially is positioning something, we don't know what, but one of his chief arguments is, but the SBC needs to reconsider women pastors. And I was telling John, I watched that first video. He has some really good points that he says, here's what's driving the decline in the SBC. And he lists out these things. And I would agree with him. I don't know the SBC as well as you, but I would agree with him on a lot of those points. I didn't realize the SBC lost 500,000 members last year, which I was like, no wonder.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not more.
Yeah.
But then he recycles talking points that I would have heard as a kid from a pastor, just old, tired things to try to fix it. And in the same time, this is my opinion, like he does a lot of propping himself up as like some sort of like expert because he has a pedigree or a deep connections within old SBC people that have been there forever, which those you could argue were probably problematic as well. So the first question I had to John was like, why wouldn't he just be like, I don't really know what I'm talking about here. So I need to just be quiet and bring in people that do. What I found interesting is that in this conversation is that he has the ability with someone like yourself and others to reach out and build that bridge, but he's not.
Yep.
So whenever that happens, I'm always like, there's got to be something here that he's flexing for a reason.
Yeah.
So do you have any insight on what, like, why is this a hot button issue for him right now? What is making this a drive for this to be a topic?
I don't know Rick personally. Mm-hmm. We've never once spoken. He never reached out to me and said, hey, I got your story. He never said, I'm so sorry you went through that. He never even said, hey, you're lying. You're not a victim. It was just conflict. He said those kind of things in news articles that this was just conflict. I personally don't even know if he ever received our stories. So there's a lot of really corrupt, not transparent things that happened when he was still in charge of Saddleback last summer, where Van Der Blumen, a hiring agency, which has some maybe skeletons in their own closet, so they're not a reputable organization, and they're not a third-party investigation organization of this nature. They bring in staff to hire at megachurches. And so Andy's in the process of being hired, Van Der Blumen is somehow involved, and they're, I don't know, investigating themselves. It's still not transparent. We spoke to this woman, Gail. I know of 20 stories that went to her. There may have been more. They weren't transparent. So I don't even know if Gail or Van Der Blumen gave him those stories. And if the corruption was either way, it's still on him because he was the guy that started this church, led it. And in the process of our stories coming to him, he did not... in real time, we're watching in the news where he's saying, he's all been cleared. We've all heard all the stories while the stories are still being given. Like, there was a lot of false narrative and image management going on, even in real time, that we observed. And to hear all there are stories way worse than ours. And there are many covered by NDAs, right? And there's lies that at the time they were releasing the NDAs, which isn't true to this day. They still have them. I know these. I mean, I don't know all of them, but I know a lot of them. They still have them. They still suffer under that silence. So I can't, I can only speculate about Rick because I don't know him, but I know Andy and he was my friend. He was my pastor. He was my boss's boss, right? And my abuser. And I know that when I was brought in as the second woman pastor, the first woman pastor they had made a big deal out of, and she was my friend at the time. But really, it became very clear we weren't making any major decisions. We were written up in blog posts by SBC people saying, oh no, how dare they have women pastors? But behind the scenes, Andy really loved the controversy because it gave limelight. I would never be able to psychologically diagnose anyone, but I have read about narcissism and there are elements in his relationship with me that I would consider narcissistic and loving the limelight. And I have serious concerns around that. My part of the reason I fight so hard is I care for him, even though I don't want to be around him and he's not safe. And he's really kind of thrown a nuclear bomb in my life and my family's life and my friends' lives, all for power, all for empire. And I think one of the most disturbing things about Rick's video when I watched it a couple weeks ago was he starts off by saying, I have no power. To me, that's a lie. That's a false narrative because he has so much power. And there's either an absence of the conversation around power in these circles or a very faulty thinking around it. But the reality is he has enormous influence and power. And he has, you know, even just the video equipment to make that video, he's been trending on Twitter all week, like that type of influence and power. And he, you know, then he lists, like, as you said, he's listing all these white male Southern Baptist ancestors of his and this trunk with their sermons and the chair he's in. It's such a power move. It's like, it's a bit nauseating even. And for him to overpower and flex his muscles theologically and religiously like that at the expense of women and what feels and seems as though using women as pawns and trophies to collect, but we're not hearing from them. Like so behind the scenes, this is how Andy operated. I really never made any major decisions. Most people in the congregation were shocked to hear that later because the appearances were I was involved and I was, you know, but I wasn't. Like I literally just asked one question one time a year into my time there and was like, he got angry at me, abused me behind closed doors. I had to be moved to a position that would be out of his, you know, vision or reach because he was so angry at me and had this contempt toward me in an unhealthy way. And so Felipe Santos had called me in October 2020 and said, we got to get you into a different role so you can get away from Andy. He has this pattern and now you're it. And so I was going to be moved to outreach pastor because Andy doesn't care about outreach. And that was sort of an open secret. And then I was eventually brought into the Lion's Den December 21st, 2020 and abused by these two men by being mobbed, flanked on both sides and interrogated. And I've heard like from others that this was a pattern. Others experienced what I experienced. I'm not the only one. There's many of these stories and worse. And so I don't know how Rick operates, but he's not off the hook by saying, I don't have power. He's not off the hook by saying, I didn't know. Because actually, if he is still complicit in covering up for the NDAs and if there are crimes involved, he legally is going to be responsible for that too. And I don't know much about the legal side, but just ethically and morally, how unacceptable is it that I work in tech now and we have a very strong no retaliation policy and we don't allow mobbing. We do videos around that and we have to learn that. And I'm constantly at my senior manager level have to be aware of that. If somebody even says in one of our surveys, we have a no retaliation policy, even in our surveys, and retaliation in the form of firing is one of the worst forms. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me, not only fired, but given an NDA tied to severance and medical insurance, which is, you know, under duress, many people signed.
Yeah.
So this is not above reproach. Like I said, we need male allies, but not these two.
I think something that would be really good to hear from you on is I'm noticing this pattern, and I know I've talked with you about this before, Lori, and I know I've talked about it with Jay too, that there is this whole movement of this like egalitarian pro-woman pastors. Like these male pastors are coming out like that. And then like the stories I'm getting behind the scenes is the women on their staffs are treated horrifically bad. And it's the same exact thing, but they're putting on a different face. And I think there's multiple things going on there, multiple layers. Like I think Rick does think he's doing the right thing now. I think he's like, wait a second. I've been telling women that they can't be in ministry my entire life. And now I'm starting to feel like maybe that was wrong. And so like, maybe he is trying to make a change, but what he's not realizing is that he's like hanging on to the patriarchy and misogyny in order to like make that shift. And so all of that extra garbage that has been decades built into how he views ministry and how he functions within ministry or ministry roles is within that framework of misogyny and patriarchy. And we're seeing it in all sorts of egalitarian contexts.
Yeah.
And what frightens me and why this conversation I feel like really does need to happen is because women are going into these spaces thinking they're safe.
Yep.
Now all of a sudden, Andy is safe. Like maybe I'm a female pastor that's been looking for someone that's going to champion women's gifts. And like, maybe I have a daughter and I want her to be underneath the leadership of pastors that believe that if she is gifted in ministry, that she can go into ministry. And what's frightening is that these men don't actually, they haven't done the hard work in themselves to root out that misogyny. And if my daughter gets on staff underneath them, then she's going to experience the same thing I experienced in Acts 29 on staff
right.
as a worship leader. It's the same garbage.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit to what it was like being a pastor as a woman at an SBC church?
I didn't see it coming. Like I did not see abuse coming in this situation for a lot of reasons. Most of the people I knew and worked with in the SBC world overseas in Latin America and Asia. And like I said, I'm not SBC anymore because of abuse allegations, like all the stuff at the Houston Chronicle and Robert Downen and the lack of the SBC response at the convention. And I just no longer could stay complicit in that, right? At the same time, I'm so grateful for those who I consider aunts and uncles that raised me to know God, to love my neighbor, who offered me a lot of love and support and discipleship and taught me the scriptures and all of that. And then people I knew overseas that were wonderful. And they're just like, they're not speaking at the convention. They're out like in Southeast Asia, just trying to learn languages and do good work and care for people. And so I'm not saying there aren't bad people I interacted with, but by and large, most people I knew in that world were good people in my perspective. And they never abused me or harmed me. Now, that's a privilege because I know not everybody grew up that way in the SBC, and my heart breaks for people who didn't have that, even the MKs and the PKs and all of that, like these children that were devoured by wolves and not protected. My heart breaks. And that should be the number one thing we're dealing with at the SBC right now. But instead, it's this, right? So what was it like coming to work as a woman pastor? I think that I thought, because I had been over 20 years, the world became way more complementarian. Even though I was an egalitarian, there had been more space for that diversity of theology earlier on. In the 90s, you had things going on when I was in college, like the Southern Baptist Convention apologized for their issues of starting based on slavery, which is true. I mean, this was not a secret. We knew this, that the American Baptists and the Southern Baptists split over this. But the narrative I was told was like, we're trying to get better and it's trying, you know, like that's our hit. There's a lot of history of institutions formed on slavery and enslaved peoples in the U.S. even now. But when you hear the narrative, we're trying to get better, I believed that. In the 90s, when they apologized, I thought, well, it's going to get better. And then after I was on the field, the new BFNM 2000 was written, and that's where Paige Patterson, Dorothy Patterson Almoler, and his wife rewrote this section on women. I did not agree with that. But even to this day, we haven't been requiring churches to sign that in order to be a part of the SBC, right? So there's this element, you don't have to agree with every single word, you know? So when I was brought in as a woman pastor, I just made this assumption it was going to be better. And in fact, it was so much worse. Like I wasn't making any decisions. Like on the field, I was always all the 20 years in leadership roles, making decisions. Men were my brothers. Now, were they complementarian and we had different theologies? Yes, but they respected me and my Holy Spirit gifts. But all of a sudden, I was being called a pastor and had zero voice. And I was tone policed regularly by Andy and Felipe. It was almost like there was this king that you had to approach in a special way, almost like Esther approaching King Artaxerxes, who's a horribly abusive man who gets drunk with his friends and he's, awful. Queen Vashti has a lot to say, the original Me Too, right? So it felt like there was this dynamic that you had to be like a Michelle Duggar in a lot of ways. You had to defer. You had to be a shiny, happy people kind of face and always admire every word they said and speak like with the sandwich analogy. But it's like, these were people I was like, when you're in it and like in my workspace now, it's not at all like that. Like we still live in patriarchy, right? But like we're adults, we're not toddlers. You can't survive as a toddler like this in tech. You have to be an emotionally healthy adult. Because
can you explain what the sandwich, like talking like that means for people?
So I'll say that in terms of, I have this friend who works at Salesforce. She's kind of big in the faith and work community. And she had written an email to Andy saying, hey, you know, I'm a part of this church and I love this church, Echo Church, but like, I don't hear a lot from women pastors. Like, you know, Stacy preaches once in a while, but like, I'd love to hear from more of our women pastors on staff. And I don't know why she said that. I didn't really know her at the time. I know her now. But and then she said at the end, also, great job. And so because she had said compliment, difficult thing to say, compliment, that I was told and shown this email as that's how you need to talk to me. But I was like, she doesn't know you. Like, she's a congregant. So obviously, if I'm in a work situation, I might email somebody I don't know very well that way. But for like my colleagues where we're doing Teams messages all day and just trying to move fast and get things done, like you don't have to sandwich everything. And I was also often told by Felipe about different women that we all know and love and respect, things like, oh, she doesn't know how to talk, so men will listen. Like this was constantly told to me. And so it's a form of tone policing to silence you. And then you just want to be a worker bee instead of have an opinion. And clearly when I asked a question, and I was abused for months and then fired eventually for that question. It's, you know, the voice of women wasn't welcome. So that's why I keep saying, where are the women? Why aren't they talking? And Andy will often introduce Stacy when she speaks as if he's her umbrella. Like he won't introduce other male pastors on the staff when they preach, but it'll be like, oh, and now I'm going to introduce my wife, Stacy. It's like this umbrella thing, like the Duggars and the shiny, happy people, Bill Gothard stuff. So I began to kind of notice these things that didn't make sense and were confusing. And then in my abusive meetings behind closed doors in his office, he basically was telling me he's a complementarian in his home. And it all made sense because it was a faux egalitarianism. I felt like a trophy. I felt like, collect all four women pastors. Look how great I am. And then it gave him a platform to have, you know, conversations with Kevin Azell at NAM. It gave him a platform to, you know, we were written up in a blog post. It's like, well, that's me like written up in there. Like, I don't know how I feel about that. But it was like, yeah, this is great. I'm out there fighting. But all I felt was he was fighting me, not fighting for me. And there's a difference to say you're fighting for women and we don't know what you're doing behind closed doors with them. Or if you're listening to them, you know, Rick Warren's videos, it's all long list of men. It's like the whole authentane word conversation, like this is not new. Women and men forever have been, you know, exegeting that word. And he isn't quoting women theologians. He's not giving his platform to a woman. He's not sharing his platform with a woman. So I just think it's fishy. And I just don't want any woman to blindly go in and think, oh, wow, there are saviors. We're damsels in distress. We need these white male shining in armor pastors to fight for us. No. I mean, the Holy Spirit has gifted us. We don't need men's permission to preach. We don't need men's permission to pastor. I pastor in my workplace now in tech, and I'm not called a pastor. I don't need their permission to use the gifts that God gave me. And I don't need anyone fighting for me. If you read Deborah and Jael with her tent peg, They had it down, you know, 30 years of peace for Israel. Thank you, Deborah and Jael, right? It's like,
I would want to know when he was speaking, again, I just watched the first video and I think Saddleback got kicked out of the SBC,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he's, I guess, someone trying to appeal that? Is that the whole gist of like, he's speaking this week to appeal it?
Yeah. And so one of the narratives I know that I saw somewhere in an article, Andy said, oh, I'd already been kicked out of the SBC. I know what this feels like. At least when I was on staff, that wasn't true. There was a moment where it's like, we were told we were kicked out, but we actually weren't. And so I think that the getting kicked out is part of it. It's part of the strategy or something. I don't know, but it just gives limelight and it gives the chance to fight. And for anybody who's familiar with Paige Patterson and all of his abuses and cover-ups that came out when the kind of the church, hashtag church too was prominent, and he ended up getting fired over it and deserved to be fired. He had this way of saying, I love a good fight and I'll always be fighting. And he and his abusive friend led Pressler. They were part of the people who led this kind of conservative takeover, where people like Molly Marshall, a wonderful professor at Southern Seminary that my dad had, was just treated horribly and gotten rid of. I studied under her mentee, Dr. Penny Marler, who was wonderful as well. But there's like a fight that's been against women and part of it all along. You know, Andy studied at Southern Seminary where Paige Patterson had been president. Like there's this fighting element where these men are just like fighting, but women get trampled. And even if you're saying we're fighting for women, I don't buy it. And it's not safe for women. And I would never recommend any woman try to be a Southern Baptist pastor as a woman in this denomination, because there's a lot of abuse of power and cover up. And we've had to get the Department of Justice involved because of it. They're not transparent. There's a lot of false narratives, image management. The institution is protecting itself. You know, back to its origins, the root is rotten. And I had hoped over time it was getting better. That was my greatest hope and desire in my 20 years of working in the IMB. My greatest shock was that it went backward and not forward. I just did not see that coming. And so, yeah, I just think that often people who abuse and groom, they're not just grooming the ones they're going to abuse, they're grooming everyone. And they groom on a grand scale when they have a mega church platform and stage and microphone, and they're about to speak at the SBC. All of us are being groomed. The question is, are we being groomed to be flying monkeys, to defend them, to be bodyguards, sycophants? Are we, or be, groomed to be abused. And the reality is I was groomed by Andy Wood to be both. So I know both roles. I went from sort of like this sort of beginning golden child situation to like the scapegoat. And so I know what that feels like to be both. And so I could not be more adamant to warn about these wolves dressed in shepherd's clothing, devouring sheep behind closed doors and doing really wicked things. So don't buy the I'm a do-gooder narrative. This do-gooder is a thing that often people who abuse will use. Like you'll have, you know, maybe somebody who's like their abuse is more in like the pedophilia kind of arena, and they will be teachers, they will be coaches, drama instructors. Like they will want to be seen as good people, because who would you least likely expect to abuse women pastors? Well, the guy who's fighting for women pastors. Like it's a great smoke and mirrors, because your brain just goes, well, not him. He's fighting for them. And that's what I thought too. He's not okay. He's not well. He needs to be removed from ministry. And that was what we asked the board for at Echo Church. That's what we told to Gail at Vanderbilt. I don't know if it ever went further, but that they need to get Dr. Diane Langberg. She's retired now. So I would recommend maybe Chuck DeGroat, somebody who has a specialty in narcissism among pastors. And he probably needs to sit out for a good decade and do a lot of repair and work on himself and a lot of navel gazing to get through this. And it appears as though Rick might be that person too, that he needs some help too. Like we need to center around women. We need to focus on abuse and not let even a good thing like having women be pastors supersede covering up wickedness and crimes.
I think that's like part of what's so frustrating about what's going on right now is we're seeing this big push for female pastors be used as a distraction from like the very real danger that exists within the SBC for anyone that is going to a church that does not take seriously sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And Jay and I, like, where we exist and what we work on is really more in like the spiritual abuse realm, right? Like sexual abuse is a whole nother level and different type of abuse, and both matter. But it's like, you think about the fact that there's like 13 million, I think it is, Southern Baptists right now, 12 million. I keep restating this because this fact blew my mind, that there's more SBC churches than McDonald's in the United States. And there is just like, it's ripe for the picking for predators. And we're sitting here like, well, I have this chair from so-and-so white supremacist SBC founder, and you should listen to me about female pastors. It's like, we don't freaking care what you have to say. Like there are people bleeding out on the side of the road that have experienced sexual abuse from predator pastors in your churches, and you're doing freaking nothing. It's jack squat, the bare minimum, lower than the bare minimum is what the SBC is doing right now. Yeah. And they're using women and the cause of women to do it. So not only are we being used and objectified to build these men's platforms, but we are being used to harm survivors of sexual abuse. It's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, and if you dig into some of the history in the United States of America, this has happened more than once in more than one realm. So like even under like, you know, we had these forced labor camps in the South largely, and these enslaved peoples. And there were ways that women, white women attached to white male power, you know, there was complicity. And yet at the same time, some of the greatest fighters for abolition were white women. And it was just not everybody was the same, but there were those, the silent bystanders who did nothing. And then also even in the right to vote movement of women, a lot of white women sidelined women of color in that process, both, you know, Asian American women and Black women. I mean, there's some dark things that went on there. And so there's just so much nuance in this conversation. You know, even on staff when I was there, it was like there was this one Black man and we were friends, and he was the only one. And I just only heard him get to speak when it was like George Floyd, you know? So they were using him as a trophy and token as well. And he's gone. And my heart breaks for him. And I just don't know. We were all being used, used to build an empire. A lot of labor abuse along the lines of Hillsong in that documentary, if you saw that. And the reality is the abuse of power is rampant with Andy Wood covered up by Rick Warren. Now they're speaking at the convention. It's completely unacceptable that this has been the biggest news and that abuse is like a non-issue. Because to me, I agree with you. When there are people bleeding out on the side, you don't pick up something and say, oh, we're going to, you know, focus on this, when it's obvious that people are floundering. I mean, I just saw somebody post today, one of the SBC abuse survivors on Twitter, and she's on her way there. And I'm like, I'm scared for her because I just don't feel like it's safe. People are going to ignore, dismiss, minimize, discredit, or discrediting the through image management on a grand scale. So after I left and didn't sign the NDA, we had about a month where we thought, oh, I guess we're going to live under a bridge. I mean, it was horrible, right? It's still COVID, online school during that year and a half for my kids here in California in the Bay Area. And then they were telling the staff at the church, you know, we weren't welcome to even come back. Our kids, like we just were, you know, not welcome anymore to the church where we worshiped, not only worked at. And so they told the staff, you know, to cut us off social media, to not follow us, that I was Jezebel, basically. I think the Jezebel thing was in private conversations with people. You know, Felipe told the whole staff I had gained weight, which I'm like, I'm not a fat person. I'm like, have I gained weight? Maybe. I'm like, everybody put on COVID weight. I don't know.
I also want to comment, like, Jason and Lori were
actually
both
said
on
that.
Staff.
That was actually said.
I had several women tell me they were horrified. It hurt them. It hurt all the women.
That is insane.
That's horrific. But also, like, Jason was also on staff.
Yeah,
Jason was also asking questions and having these conversations, but just notice how the controversy and the problem is Lord, not Jason.
Right.
Jason just gets to just fade into the background, and Jason is here. That's Lori's husband. We love him, you know, but like it is interesting in a pattern we see where there will be equal, like, equal pushback from men and women, but women will be the target and the enemy, and they are made an example of, and the men are not. Jason's like, leave me out of this conversation. You can't be left out. But it's just like, it's interesting that now these men are the ones that are supposed to like protect and champion women pastors within the SBC, yet they had every opportunity. If they really thought like you and Jason are just like these damaged, hurt people that are just don't understand ministry in the United States, then why weren't they talking about you and Jason, really? Why were they just talking about Lori?
Yeah.
Like, why were they so focused on Lori being a Jezebel and Lori's weight and appearance and Lori making sure she sandwiched things with a compliment on both sides before she said something that, like, literally was not offensive, what you even said, that made them so mad? So, this is the why we felt like we needed to have this conversation, was like, this is not safe. This is dangerous. It's actually dangerous. And it's freaking frustrating. Like, guys, if you go do anything, there has been multiple people throughout our time on this live. If you do anything, go stand with and support survivors online. Like, if you know any of them, go platform them, like keep pressure from the outside on the SBC right now. Like, do not get distracted by Rick and his millions of SBC paraphernalia that he has around him in his videos. Like, focus on the survivors. Like, focus on the survivors. That should be where our focus is right now.
Absolutely.
I know Jay had another question for you. And I also want to make sure, if you guys have questions, put them in the chat and I'll go through at the end real quick and we'll try to get to them.
I did have one question that I thought of. First, I would say that this wasn't the question, but Rick mentioned that there was a lot of factions that within the SVC. What's ironic is that as I listened to the video, he's creating another faction, even though he's not a part of the SVC, but he really is creating another faction. That there isn't like this humility of saying, like, I've mistreated women. I've done things that are wrong. I'm clearly not in the position to be able to talk about this, so I'm going to step back and repent and bring in women, because this is a problem, we need to solve it. Like, that would be, in my opinion, like a way to address it. But instead, it's like, again, when I listen to it, it's like, okay, you're just creating another faction that you're kind of the top person on, which is not helpful. But the thing that really stuck out, you have 500,000 people that left the church last year. You have 500,000 people, for whatever reason, left. Who knows why they left? They could have left in situations like that you experienced. It could be other abuse that happened. And is this someone that, as I've gotten to know you, you have a shepherd's heart and you want to shepherd people? Those people are leaving. What would be your advice or even your hope for them to say there is hope outside of this institution, that this institution is not your salvation? It is not, in my opinion, Christ-like. It is an institution that is causing more harm than good right now. And I'm not saying that it's not causing, there's not good things there. I'm sure there is, but we're not focused on the right things. With those people, I look at those people and I go, there are so many hurting people that may walk away from the faith forever or experiencing trauma or hurt in just epic proportions. Like, what would you say to them? How would you want to shepherd them, not knowing them personally, but what would you say?
Yeah, this is very close to my daily experience because I daily walk alongside many of the survivors of abuse at the hands of my own abuser, Andy Wood, and some of those who actually went and gave their stories, these pearls, to the faux investigation last summer at Saddleback, and then were re-traumatized and crushed when literally they heard zero and needed pastoring. They're bleeding, they're suffering. You know, several of these have NDAs. And can you imagine living under the weight of an NDA when you know there are so many of us? And then you watch the man who abused you go to Saddleback to have 20,000 people he can do this to, including campuses around the world and places like Hong Kong, places like, you know, I'm just like, please don't hurt Asia. Like, please. And then now he's going to be speaking at the SBC as a champion, supposedly, for women. And some of these survivors are women, not all, right? So obviously there are many men that were abused, men that have NDAs as well. But there's a special layer to it with the misogyny and the fact that they brought in women pastors and didn't do the very deep and hard work of anti-sexism. It was like, step one, we brought a woman pastor and we're done. And shouldn't you say you're grateful to me every single day and like bring me a present because of how I let you be at my table, even though I don't want you to say anything? You're here. Isn't that the greatest honor?
I think you're serving the dinner. I let you cook me dinner and then you can sit at the table, but don't talk.
Yeah. Here, can you pour me some sweet tea? Aren't you so grateful I let you in the room? And so honestly, I think that people are observing that. I think Gen Z, and especially, I'm raising three of them, they don't have time for this. They're just so beyond this kind of thing. They see the abuse of power. They see the lack of diversity. They know that, it's, you know, the more brains we have around the table, the better decisions we're going to make. Part of the way to abuse proof is just to have multiple perspectives, not an all male board. For example, I mean, have racial diversity, have gender diversity, and don't just have one woman on there, and don't have the one woman you know that will never speak her mind because she's very silent. You know, these are things that Gen Z particularly notices. And so I think I could not be more adamant in my disagreement with Rick Warren about why he says people are leaving the SBC. Number one should have been abuse and its cover up. Because abuse, cover up, repeat, is the flywheel that Andy has used to build his church, a lot like what you see in the Hillsong documentary. And also now Saddleback is a part of that story. It's a part of my story. It's a part of the story of the survivors of abuse of Andy Wood, because now this thing has happened together, the cover up. And so people that are walking away, a lot of abuse survivors, and me in particular, I can speak to this on a firsthand basis. My autonomic nervous system has serious reactions walking to an evangelical worship service where, and this happened starting 2 years ago, when I hear Hillsong or I hear Bethel songs, because now not only were those songs sung at my church, and there's something about music that draws you back in your memory in a stronger way, like olfactory, and then also things like, you know, your auditory can really take you back to what it felt like in your body. And it's just my autonomic nervous system doesn't feel safe. Like it reacts and I have a fight or flight, freeze, fawn kind of response. And for me in those scenarios, it's just been like a flight. I can't be here. And so a lot of people can't walk into churches, not because they're just like wanting to sleep with their boyfriend, but it's because they literally have trauma. And I just, why did Rick not mention abuse and trauma as number one reason? And secondarily, I would say, the justice issues are huge for not only millennial generation, but especially Gen Z. And I sit on the board of Justice Revival. We're trying to pass the ERA with people of faith. Because you know what? Women are image bearers too. And why is it that like literally it's been 100 years and since this was thought up, and it's been solid 50 years since we've been fighting for the ERA, people of faith should be the prominent ones centering around this. And it's always excused by this or that. But the reality is people watching how the SBC has not only acted unjustly, but covered up injustice when they should be the very ones fighting for justice. If we're told do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God, and they're doing the opposite, people see that. And so we've been told, my husband kept getting messages from one of our abusers' moms. She kept just saying, well, you're going to make people not go to church. And it's like, wait, what? Because we're telling the truth. It's like, okay, have you read any newspaper in the last 10 years in Australia, in the UK, in the United States? Like priests and pastors abusing people is not even shocking. It's not even news anymore. It's so common. And that's disgusting and horrifying to say as somebody who loves Jesus and loves the church, the global church. But it's not new to say that people are being abused. What the world and my friends who don't go to church never have want to see is that we actually do something about it. That's why people are leaving the church. That should have been number one, number two on Rick's list. And so to even not mention it is part of the cover up. It's part of the gaslighting. It's part of the image management. And it's part of the male-centric patriarchy that hurts everyone, him included. Patriarchy does not only hurt women, it hurts men. It's a standard no one should put themselves in to make them blind to their own privilege and power. It's not Jesus at all who spent his time on the margins with the oppressed. God's heart is for the oppressed. God is always on the side of the oppressed. And when the SBC is the oppressor and covering it up, I'm sorry, but that's not where Jesus is residing. And I think that we need to get way more honest about the reasons people are leaving the church and say to them, I don't know what this next phase looks like, but oh my gosh, whatever happens, it cannot look like how it has looked. And I personally just refuse to be a part of a system that abuses people and covers it up. I think the larger your system is, the larger your church is, the more you're going to protect the institution. I have a bachelor's in sociology. I know how institutions protect themselves. It's very rare to have a large organization that's not going to use image management. So to me, like smaller is better, safer for me as a survivor and my kids. I don't want to put my kids through this again. They have no desire to walk through this again. We are still picking up the pieces of our lives 2 years later after tons of therapy and a village of people that have helped us survive. So I would say that if you're a person who's observed this, if you have a family member, friend, or certainly if you're a survivor of psychological, emotional, verbal, financial, labor, sexual, or any kind of abuse of power by your pastor or by your church, and you're just having trouble walking into a church, I would just say spend time in nature. God created everything we see and don't see. And spend some time in awe and wonder. The cliffs near me, 15 minutes away in Santa Cruz, here are beautiful. We just spent a lot of time. I sat and read Job out on those cliffs and had a lot of, I went through the Psalms and I lamented. And I said, how long, O Lord? Break their arms, oh Lord, just like all kinds of things in there. And I just had to learn to pray prayers I never imagined myself praying because the system, their arms abused, their web of abuse. There's like not a month that goes by that I don't hear another story of abuse by my abuser. And I just, when I speak on behalf of those who, for whatever reason, NDAs, fear, career, just scared. The power by fear is real, and it's not godly. So I adamantly stand against this whole narrative. Centering women is where we need to go, centering survivors, and be warned about these wolves. They're not safe.
Amen. I have a couple questions in the chat if you have a minute to get to them real quick. Do you have a minute? Margaret asked an awesome question. What's a good first step for male and female pastors who want to deprogram themselves from misogyny? Do you have any insight into that?
Misogyny is a really hard one. I would say deprogramming just in general, step one that's been very helpful for my husband and I is one of the many tools that we used in our village that we brought around us that handpicked, created people to help each of us survive. Is Dan White Jr. and Tanya White. We're in the megachurch world. He's written some books. She's written some articles and stuff, and they have a retreat center in Puerto Rico. So instead of like going to be a seminary professor and continuing in megachurch world, they just like left it all here in the United States and started a retreat center. So we were a part of Kineo cohorts for 6 months where you read articles. Some of them have been written by Chuck DeGroat. And this really just incredible, outstanding Puerto Rican pastor that's written some of them. And Dan and Tanya write some of them. And you read the articles every week. And through your cohort, you walk through some of that together. And it's really good. And just kind of figuring out what happened to you and how to move forward. And it ends in a retreat in Puerto Rico. So we really benefited from that. And that I think is... especially for anybody who wants to continue on in ministry, I would just absolutely recommend it because it helps you. You need to do a bit of internal work, even as a survivor. And that's that to me, I had to go inward because when I know that what I had in front of me, I instinctively knew something had happened in Andy Wood's past and I don't know what it is and he doesn't really talk about it. But if I understand how narcissism evolves and works, it's because you had some sort of like trauma or abuse in your background and you didn't get therapy and work through it for yourself. So I knew I don't want to be like him. So I need to do whatever it takes to weed out what happened to me so that I don't use this to hurt others and wound hunt them and be a wounded wounder, but to be a wounded healer. And I guess when it comes to misogyny, I would just say one of the greatest things people can do is start to read in terms of if you're going to be in ministry, read female theologians. If you look at your bookshelf and they're all white men, you know, that's a problem. So, I mean, I love white men. I'm married to one. I'm raising a couple of them. My dad's one. But overall, like that is a skewed version of humanity. It's a very small sliver. So I've really benefited over many years by reading womanist theologians who are like black women. They've helped me see the story of Hagar in a completely different way. And then Mujerista theologians who are Latina theologians. So just branch out in the people that are helping you see the Bible because we all read through a lens, whatever our language is, even if English, our particular translation, are you reading the ESV? It's a very unabashedly complementarian translation, the words they chose. Like Scott McKnight's new translation of the New Testament, I would recommend. Also, I read the CEB. They have women on the translation team and they have different people of color. So figure out who's translating the Bible version that you read. You know, that's important. Is it just all white men who are complementarian? Then you're going to get that lens. Because I know having, you know, studied multiple languages, there's choices we make in translation. You can choose this or that and you can sway people. And that happens. So yeah, just like really doing the work of anti-sexism, I think starts with listening to the voices of people who are going to be bringing out a feminist perspective. I know that word's triggering to some people here in the United States and the white evangelical community, but the definition of feminism is just men and women are equal. And I read Genesis 1:27 to say, God created Eve as an edzer kenegdo, and edzer is a helper word referring to God in most other passages in the Bible. So that famous psalm, God is an ever-present help in times of trouble. That's us, women. You're ready to help in times of trouble. And the SBC is in trouble. So the SBC needs women to help out. They need to center women, center survivors. Kenegdo means shoulder to shoulder. It's not a hierarchy. God did not create men and women with hierarchy. In fact, Jesus was flipping hierarchy most of his ministry. So God's kingdom is not empire. And so I think part of it is just not centering male voices, that we are going to swim in that no matter what we do. That's the ocean we swim in. That's the air we breathe. You have to work very hard to listen to women. I hope the SBC will.
So good. Thank you. Awesome. I saw one other question that I think is good. It's from Nate. How like, do you have an opinion or an idea? I think when we ask these questions, all of us, just so everybody knows, we're all asking these questions on phone calls with each other behind the scenes. And all of us are just like sitting quietly, just like, I have no idea, with our eyes wide open. But how do we get churches to see the wide open back door with people leaving when their growth charts still look like they're up and to the right?
This is an excellent question. So, I mean, I obviously got abused for asking a question, but after I was being abused for asking a question, I was in an SLT meeting at Echo. And I brought up in one of our meetings, are we going to talk about how the back door is just wide open and people are fleeing out of it? And it was like crickets and like very uncomfortable moment. And it was very quickly kind of dismissed. And then I was like, and also our attrition rate on staff is pretty high. And that was, whoa, what just happened? And then somebody quickly was a flying monkey in the situation and kind of put me in my place. Like, we just don't talk about Bruno, basically.
Also, hold on 1 second. You said flying monkey earlier. Just okay. So everybody knows what that is, it's like connected to the Wizard of Oz and how the Wicked Witch of the West sends out her flying monkeys to like protect her or do her dirty work. So that's the idea of it, is those flying monkeys in the Wizard of Oz that are like doing the work for protecting the Wicked Witch. That's where that term comes from.
And I say it, I laugh about it now, but the reality is I look back and there were times that I was one. And that's the whole sick part of the psychological abuse in the system, is that my abuser is, he's actually very smart. And, you know, he reads books on, you know, how to like humans think and like these psychology things. It's like, I don't know how they find these things out, but in this bro club, they pass on this information. Even like I found out not long ago that, you know, my abuser had been recording me, and that's illegal in the state of California, but there's like video and audio recording of me, which are both not legal here. And that was like advice given to him by other people in other states that are doing that too. It's like, what is happening? Why are they like spying on us? It's just pastor. Why don't you pastor people? People are trying to get meetings with you and you're spending time spying on your staff. Like, oh my gosh, please. Right. So this is part of the power by fear that we were feeling in our bodies. I think my body knew things my brain didn't cognitively understand. And a lot of us were that way. So part of my healing has been DBT therapy. A lot of people have done EMDR therapy. We have trauma nightmares. So Rick can say this was conflict and not abuse, but our bodies tell us something very differently in the Echo Survivor community. And by the way, we have 1,600 signatures on our petition to release the NDAs. Thank you, Bodies Behind the Bus, for raising some awareness for us. And they still haven't released them. So we're still trying to just warn people in this way. But yeah, I don't know how, because I tried to speak up internally at my church about that. The reality is Andy has a precious flywheel that he learned from Rick Warren back when he was in high school, because he sort of adored Saddleback's model. It's this flywheel. And really, I would describe the flywheel as abuse, cover up, repeat. But a lot of what it involves is grooming, love bombing, ingratiation. And it's free mugs, free t-shirts, billboards. There's a billboard on the road that we pass all the time. And it says, Echo Church is a safe place to ask your questions. I mean, there could not be anything. I mean, I asked one question and I was abused for months, fired, given NDA, tied to severance. Like, it's not safe to ask questions. So they'll say the opposite. Like, we're fighting for women pastors. Don't mind the fact that we're abusing them back here. So just whatever they say, it might be the opposite. I don't know that it's safe inside churches like this or inside an organization like the SBC that's so good at image management and false narratives on a grand scale. So I don't know, honestly, how you get them to pay attention to it. I mean, you could just point out the data. And I tried to do that in roundabout ways by having my boss point it out, because he was a man. And I thought they might listen to him, because I was concerned. I was concerned about the high attrition rate and I was concerned about how many people were leaving. But the reality is, when people left, either from the staff or from the church, Andy would just cut them off Facebook and be like, I'm never going to talk to them again. And it felt like very toddler to me. I just didn't understand how you didn't have the emotional bandwidth to, I mean, we had many people over the years we'd worked with as colleagues overseas. I mean, it was a hard place to work. We had civil war, tsunami. I mean, Lascar G, I was trying to sweep us out as Americans after America started bombing Afghanistan after 9/11. We had to evacuate a place we were evacuated from. I mean, I know, crazy stuff. Of course, people aren't going to be able to stay there long-term. We understood. And we would still stay connected. We wouldn't just cut them off social media. Like, you're dead to me. So there was something very toxic about not wanting to know why people left, but instead more mugs, t-shirts, billboards, expensive parties, $10,000 for like a waterfall, one service at an at the movies thing, which was like a fifth of my salary annually. You know, just the amount of money and events and glitz and glam and fog machines and like, you know, euphoria and worship that they used to bring people in who were lonely, just moved here for their job, young professionals, wanted to find a wife, loved the kids program and free Nintendo Switches or whatever. All of that flywheel continued to bring people in. And it was a non-conversation about people leaving. So honestly, I tried and I couldn't get it to work. So I'm going to be one of those people on the phone, just silent, I guess. I don't know what the answer is.
We don't. Like, that's the hardest thing is like, it's so vast. The problem's so big and it's so ingrained into the way that we do church in America that it feels like there's not an answer except for being completely outside of it is as where we've landed at least. And gosh, I just like, I was talking to someone the other day and we were talking about like the kingdom of God is not a country club.
Yeah.
And we have like this idea that like going to church is like all these perks and all this like amazing stuff. And it's like a club, it's like a social club, but like that's what we're discipling into people is that's what you can expect. And like, you don't care if somebody leaves their membership at the country club and isn't coming to the pool anymore. Like the next person walking around with Mai Tais is going to be the person you're talking to, you know? It's like,
hey, if
people are not being cared for. Yeah. People are not being cared for. So, I mean, it's just like, it's so vast. I don't know. We're all like outside of institutionalized churches right now because of that.
I see somebody had the question, what's the difference between conflict and abuse? And I think that's like kind of a really big one because Andy would minimize my abuse and that of many others as just conflict. And Rick Warren also has. So I think understands that by nature, calling it out, you're going to be discredited as a whistleblower. You're going to be minimized. They're going to say, oh, you think you're such a victim. That's just, we do that in our culture at large. So being in the world and not of it, I don't see that happening. I was taught that growing up as a Southern Baptist by Southern Baptists, and they are more like the world than the world. I mean, it's just crazy, mm-hmm. right? This like, they are more patriarchy than the average workplace in America. I mean, it's crazy, right? They are not handling abuse well. The world is not great at it, but it's even worse, you know? And so conflict to me is, you know, you disagree. It's not bad. I'm an Enneagram 8. I don't love conflict, but I mean, I'm in things I care about. If you say something that I find offensive or that might harm someone else or just like a really not great decision where there's a blind spot and, you know, we're colleagues at work, I'm going to challenge that. And it may feel like conflict to a 9, for example, but you know, Brené Brown would say a good rumble, every team needs to have that every now and then. And that's not bad. Conflict can be bad, but it's not necessarily bad. Abuse, there's a lot of ways to define it, but if you're misusing people, especially if you're misusing them for your own personal gain, and especially if there's a power dynamic, so it's like a boss, or a spiritual authority over someone, or a man over a woman. Like when you look at any social hierarchy and there's 1, 2, and even 3 layers of privilege and power over that person and you're misusing them, I mean, that's going to be a form of abuse at some level. And there's multiple kinds, you know. I have somebody very dear to me whose husband was financially abusing her. She didn't have a bank account. And, you know, that's just awful. Like it's a form of abuse where she couldn't buy things and couldn't do things for the kids. And like he was misusing her. I mean, I was financially abused at Echo as well because they weren't paying into my Social Security for a solid year. And I tried to get them to rectify that and they didn't. And then they just started from that moment on once they decided to do something. And then also my retirement wasn't paid for a solid year. They just don't do anything about it. It's just like, whatever. So yeah, there's multiple, that's misusing me. To me, if you're a Christian, you follow Jesus, you're supposed to make wrongs right. It's not just words. You can say, I fight for women pastors and then not do it. You can say, I believe women should be pastors and not do anything about it. You can say I'm anti-abuse and be abusing people. Like words mean nothing, you know, in our understanding of what should happen. So it's one thing for Rick to even come out and say, oh, I believe women can be pastors now. great. Well, what are you doing to repair? You know, there's a lot. I mean, you're talking 50 years just for yourself. Like, how are you making amends? How are you making wrongs right? That was some of the hardest work I had to do as a survivor after ECHO, is come call people up and say, I didn't treat you well. I didn't have all the information. But with what I knew, I didn't use my power and privilege to stay curious and ask more. And I had to go make amends with a couple of women that I had fired. That was really hard. Now we have a great relationship. There was a lot of resurrection there, but that was in the middle of my life blowing up. And it was, but for me as a person, I need to be authentic and I need to be humble. And I am not a perfect person. I've done a lot of things wrong. I've made a lot of mistakes, but when I see men power privilege, like Rick and Andy speaking at the SBC, like there's red flags all over that.
Lance wrote, conflict is a difference of opinion, a disagreement, or potentially a hurt feeling. Abuse is when someone's boundaries are violated. They're being demeaned or devalued by someone in a position of power or authority.
Love that.
Thank you, Lance.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's good, Lance.
Lance is one of the followers too. You can read about him in articles. He spoke out before I did. Him and Amy Street were the two original ones I know of that went to the press before us. So
They paved the way. That's hard. It's hard to be one paving the way. So thank you. Oh my goodness. You guys, everyone that's been here throughout it, Lori,
this is awesome.
We're just so grateful. Yeah. We're so grateful for this conversation. And I hope, honestly, like the SBC stuff blows my mind, how that entire thing works. Crazy to me. Like, it's so complicated, but I hope that they follow through with the disfellowship of Saddleback under the reasoning of Andy Wood being credibly accused of abuse and then not actually having the integrity to allow a third party investigation to come in.
Yeah.
Because we don't have on paper, like, we don't have an investigation that cleared you, Andy. We don't have an investigation that cleared you, Rick. So if you are a man of integrity character, then do the investigation.
Yeah. And third party, I would add, because Vanderblumen, they might say, was a third party. We transparency as to whether they were the ones that were helping them hire someone originally or not. We don't know because they just weren't transparent. But third party organization that specializes in investigations of this nature. You know, you have somebody like Dr. Wade Mullen. Mm-hmm. He has a dissertation on the, like, evangelical institutions in the wake of an image threatening event, right? I mean, who has a dissertation on this actual thing? And he has Pellucid, or there's like Grace Ministries, right? This is what they do. That's not what Vanderblumen does. Vanderblumen brings people to be hired, and they have a level of vetting just like you would in any recruiting role, but that's not the same as abuse allegations in a system.
I'll say it, their level of vetting is crap. Yeah. I know it's crap because I've seen them let people get hired that shouldn't have been hired. So
yeah,
I'll say it.
Right.
They're not even good at that part. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, yes, we want a credible third party investigation from people that are specializing in this. And unfortunately, there's not a ton of options, but there are options. And the options are growing in awareness and people that are educated in this that can step in. Yeah. And if you love the church, Rick, Andy, other pastors, call for this stuff. We should not be scared. Yeah. We should not be scared of other eyeballs on how we do ministry. We should desire that, because the goal is shepherding people, protecting, caring, loving, showing them the love of Jesus. And all of us need third party eyes on us at different points. Like, that's a trust signal to people. So I'm hopeful for you guys that one day on this earth, we're going to see some justice. And until then, we're going to make as much noise as we can.
Release the NDAs too. So
yes.
Where can people sign your petition or petition?
Yeah. Change.org has our petition. Okay. DA Echo Church. I can't remember the order of it, but it's, if you go to my, link tree, it's in there. And, we can put it in the show notes or whatever you need. This is the podcast leader thing, but also, I just think that we need to ask the SBC if they're going to just stay as a denomination to not use women as pawns. Center women, center survivors, abuse should be your number one priority. And the money that's there, and there's plenty of it, should be used to help pay for therapy bills, to repair. It should be paying legal bills of the survivors. And we should not be platforming these pastors who've abused and passing them on, like our abuser got passed a settlement. Now I see this is the pattern, right? There is no reason that somebody with credible abuse allegations, especially as many as Andy, should be speaking at the SBC for any reason. He needs help. He's not safe to himself or others. And I see this out of compassion and love for him, even though I have no desire to ever be around him until he's healthy again. Mm-hmm. But for him, as much as for anyone.
Amen. Last question, then we're going to let Lori go.
Okay.
Back to her work day. What needs to be done to release the NDAs?
So you can email fsantos@echo.church, Felipe Santos' email address, and ask them to release him. We've got several people that have been abused by Andy Wood and Felipe Santos over the years, even watching this right now, and their voices have just been silenced over and over again.
So it's going to take Felipe, who's the executive pastor,
to release
Echo, right? To release it.
Once Andy went to Saddleback, Felipe became the lead pastor, so he's the top guy. But the other route, if that worked, you could email Andy at Saddleback, email Rick Warren. You could email the SBC and just say, this is a SBC-affiliated church. Are you okay with NDAs? Hmm. So any of those routes, they basically have said, they came out last year when we got about 1,300 signatures and made a video saying, like a thing on their website that says, we don't have NDAs, but we do have NDAs. So even that was sort of outing themselves. They don't typically respond. Silence is one of the highest values, hence the NDAs. So if you gossip, you'll get fired. That's part of the silencing. Tone policing was a part of the silencing. Just not inviting people to certain meetings and being secretive about things. So silence is part of the whole thing. So when they don't speak out, you don't really see Andy or Felipe on Twitter very much. Rick's pretty active right now, so he's trending, but they not speak because they say, well, we shouldn't. I think the narrative they were telling on staff last year about me was, we return evil with good. So I don't know if I'm evil, things I'm saying are evil, asking for NDAs being released is evil. I'm not really sure, but they're being good by being silent. So it's not an easy thing to ask for. Institutions protect themselves. But yeah, feel free to email Felipe and just say, hey, why are the... And he'll probably say, you can come to a meeting one-on-one with me, but never do that because that's where the abuse happens. So,
well, thank you, Lori. I hope people listen to this. I hope that people understand the workings that are happening underneath the surface when it looks like Rick is championing something good, but behind the scenes, he's actually doing way more harm with the way that he's acting right now. So
yeah.
I'm really grateful for you taking the time to kind of help educate us all on what's going on and how we can kind of start to pick this apart as we're all observing the weirdness that's happening over in the SBC. And now everybody that's been on here or everyone that's listening to this, go hunt down some survivors and freaking support them. Send them a comment of encouragement. Tell them that you stand with them, show them that they're not alone, and then use your privilege, especially if you're not a survivor, to make as much noise as you can and to make the people that need to be uncomfortable as uncomfortable as possible right now. Tomorrow, I think, is the last day of the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So we got about 24 hours to make some noise and try to make as many people uncomfortable that deserve to be uncomfortable right now as possible.
Yeah. And there's NDAs. Speaking is the biggest threat. And saying out loud what happened behind the curtain, the dark secrets behind the curtain, they don't want them out because that's what protects these guys and they keep abusing again and again. So yeah, center survivors, center women, and let's focus on abuse.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed here are the speaker's own and not those of this podcast. This content is presented for informational and educational purposes that constitute fair use, commentary, or criticism. While we make every effort to ensure that the information shared is accurate, we welcome any comment, suggestion, or correction of errors.